This is Circe Olson Westner. I'm the director of the Museum of the American Military Family and Learning Center in Tejeras, New Mexico, and this is our podcast, Together We Serve. I'm speaking to Army veteran, nurse practitioner, mom. Well, I'll let you explain everything she is. She wears tons of hats. At any rate, welcome, Michelle Peacock, to our podcast. Hi.
Hi, good morning.
So I wanted to mention to our listeners that we are doing this via Zoom because of the pandemic and distance, but I appreciate you getting up early in the morning to join us. I also wanted to say that National Nurses Week was just a little bit ago, a couple weeks ago, and I wanted to thank you for all you do to help your patients thrive and to mention that you work for a federal agency as a nurse practitioner. And I imagine that's been pretty interesting during the pandemic.
It has been very interesting during the pandemic. I think that I'd have to say that, you know, nurses are very resilient and forward thinkers, and were able to pivot a lot during this pandemic. So the nurses that I am fortunate enough to work with came up with really sound plans on how to kind of do follow-up care. So I'm a family nurse practitioner by trade, in addition to my other hats. And so not being able to see my patients face-to-face was a little rough, but we figured out ways to do telephone visits or video visits. And then the nurses that I worked with actually came up with a system to call each of our patients that were resting at home that had COVID and check in with them twice a day to make sure that their symptoms were getting better. And if they weren't, they triaged them and got them directly admitted if needed. So our nurses are pretty amazing.
Well, this kind of makes me think. So when you were studying nursing and you went on to be a nurse practitioner, did you ever in your wildest imagination think you would be working through a global pandemic?
No.
I don't know.
Right? When I've been deployed when there was like swine flu and other different, you know, type of concerns. And one of my deployments, I took care of patients that had a huge population that had tuberculosis. But not in my wildest dreams did I think that I would have a family at home that I was worried about catching this disease process, but also understand, like, having to explain to them that I'm going to go to work and you're going to stay home and stay safe, right? Mm-hmm. And there might be times when we don't see each other, but I have to work.
Yeah. So you alluded to some of this already by, you know, switching to telephone triage and things like that. What else? How did your practice shift and change differently from January 2020 to the present day? I mean, what did you guys really do differently as a office or as a healthcare setting?
Well, I think it was the year of innovation. So my supervisor had an opportunity for a learning experience, which was supposed to last for 6 weeks, and she ended up being gone for much longer, and I was acting like chief of that service. And then I kind of stayed for longer than the 6 weeks that I had planned. And so together we kind of decided, okay, what can we do to keep, you know, our patients safe, right? Mm-hmm. And understanding that since patients aren't coming into our clinics to be seen, what do we do to help them? And so, you know, some of our providers volunteered for working on the inpatient hospital. Mm. We built an extra hospital. We moved all of our visits to a different platform. And then we had to learn that platform, you know, we all had to learn Zoom in a new way.
Yeah.
And I think it's hard, like being a family nurse practitioner, most of the visit is a visit, in my opinion. 80% of your clinic time is getting to know your patients and understanding their lived experience and what it means for them to have their disease process. And I would say then maybe 5% is you kind of figuring out how to help them. Mm-hmm. 3% is the physical, but that 3% of doing a physical, it doesn't take me much time at all, but man, do I miss listening to hearts and lungs and mm-hmm. shaking hands and giving a high five when someone's doing good with, you know, some like a lifestyle change. And so
right.
we had to really get used to reading people's faces over the computer or, you know, looking at skin things on Zoom.
Yeah.
And I don't like dermatology, but I try really hard. But I think we all just adapted and we just said, okay, whatever you need, we'll do it.
Right.
And so there's a lot of valor and I fear a lot of burnout coming out.
Yeah. So when I talk to some of my friends who work in healthcare, it's interesting to see how much more optimistic they are now than even 5 months ago. In the early days, they were, and my own son included, they were working massive amounts of overtime in very scary situations. But it seems there's a collective breath being taken now. And do you feel more optimistic right now?
I do. Once, you know, I kind of had this fear of, I wanted to make sure other people that I work with had their vaccine first. Mm-hmm. But, and then once you have the vaccine, all I want to do is make sure every single person gets it. And it's when a patient comes in and they're vaccinated and we can, you know, give a high five again, and I can do their physical and check their, you know, lymph nodes and lungs and not worry about things, you know, it's a whole different feeling. And I think everyone has missed things, right? Like our children miss their friends and they miss playing and those social interactions. And we miss, so my mom works in the COVID ICU and I missed seeing her. Like I know I had my own responsibilities of seeing patients and being a supervisor, but I missed being able to walk to her house and hang out because she works in the COVID ICU. And if I'm experiencing that, and I'm a very lucky person, then I know that other people are experiencing it and it's even harder. I think when you're a veteran, you kind of just say, okay, this too shall pass, right? This, and I told Greg, my husband, I said, you know, this is not going to be fun, but we're just going to treat it like a deployment. And we're going to get through it on the other side and there'll be some things that we miss, but we'll get through it. But not everyone has that mentality. That kind of, this is a deployment. We're going to do the right thing, get it all done, and we'll be on the other side when we're done.
It sounds like for you, missing people, missing your mother, missing human connections was the hardest about the pandemic. What was the best thing about, the most rewarding thing about the pandemic? You know, it's a hard question when you think about it.
Oh, like if I want to say globally, I'm proud of us for trusting scientists and letting them kind of work through this and creating these opportunities for medications and for vaccines to treat a disease process. And I think for me, you know, I'm glad I made through it. I finished another semester of my PhD, you know, I kind of focused in on my PhD, what I'm going to do my dissertation on. So those things are great. And family-wise, you know, my husband's doing well. He's super wonderful and very supportive. You know, he's not in the military, so he joined this woman veteran and has to kind of do things. And our kids are doing well. And we hike more and we do picnics all the time now. And we seek the outdoors and community more. So I think it gave us all an opportunity be more grateful for what we have.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same, you know, despite being isolated, I didn't go to a doctor's office for 14 months or something. I stayed home. But I did take a job for a little bit as a contact tracer. for the state. And it was emotionally draining, but inspiring. And I was amazed at the teamwork and camaraderie that the whole Department of Health team had. They were going the extra mile to find food and resources. Sometimes actually individual people just going to the Walmart on the way home and then driving groceries to somebody that they had only met over the phone, you know? So I felt that even despite being isolated, we were collectively working together for humankind, you know, for humanity. But on the other hand, you know, we are hearing more and more about how much anxiety levels have gone up and depression during the pandemic. And I have had several friends die. It's been a very frightening time. So I guess, how did you, and you've alluded that your family did okay during this whole thing and you treated it like a deployment, but how else did you mentally keep it all together for your patients and for your family? And what lessons did you learn personally from the pandemic? And one other thing, I'm like a like squirrel, ooh, ooh. And what heroes did you see emerge in your own circle?
What? Can you say that part again?
The squirrel part got you. So how did you personally keep it together for your patients, your family? And then what lessons did you learn? And then what heroes did you see emerge in your own circles?
Yeah. So my friends and I actually talked about this. There's a group of us Army nurses who deployed together quite a few times. And we kind of went into this mindset of this, some people call it the vow where you're just, it's not that you go numb, but you just know that you have to work through it. I equate it to, you know, when I was in Afghanistan, I worked on a forward surgical team, and there'd be times when we were up for 24 or 48 hours and you just slept for 4 hours, but you had this kind of mission mindset and you pushed through it. Mm-hmm. And I think for this, we kind of knew like this was scary. And we didn't know anything about it. And every time I would get information from the CDC or other news sources, it would change almost sometimes 3 or 4 times a day. Mm-hmm. So we kind of got into this mode where for the people that I believe in servant leadership. So the people that I work for, right? So what I did was become 100%, well, not become, because I'm very transparent, probably to my detriment, but just explain everything as it came to me. Like, here's what we see on the horizon, and here's what they're telling us right now. This is the most up-to-date information. Please understand this might change, but this is what we have to do with our mission going forward. Mm-hmm. And when you have that kind of open honesty and transparency, everyone kind of pulls together, because you're all working towards the same mission. So that flexibility within my team and at work was, it kind of is easier once you've deployed, right? Mm-hmm. I always keep this mindset where I get to go home and I get to shower and I actually get to drive a car today, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not getting, you know, there's no rockets, right? I'm not sitting in a bunker. I'm not getting shot at. So while this is hard, there have been harder things in my life. And so that's what my mindset is. And as long as I'm being a good servant leader and explain everything to the people that I work for, right? My employees, and if I just make sure that everyone does the right thing, then you can go home and know you did a good job. Mm-hmm. So that was my mindset, and I just treated it like as such. Mm-hmm. And so how did I personally grow? One is that I said no to a few things. I put my PhD on pause. I said no to a couple things. And I said, listen, right now there's a pandemic and I have to focus on this. Mm-hmm. And I got the grace from people to say, okay, you can put your PhD on pause and you're going to focus on this. But in being a servant leader and trying to be very in tune with my employees, I realized that burnout at this point could get even worse. And so I started researching burnout and trying to find good interventions for burnout, which is why I decided to pilot and got permission to pilot teleworking, which hadn't really been done in healthcare per se, especially in what I call family practice, right? And so trying to implement that and studying how to look at it, you know, do a pre and post survey about that telework was eye-opening for me, but also gave me tools and to say, how can I help, you know, an employee who's experiencing burnout? Because, you know, healthcare, I think people sometimes do the, oh, let's cheer on everyone in healthcare right now when there's this kind of black swan event. But the truth is every day people get tired, and we in healthcare, we work really hard because we're invested in the mission. We're invested in helping people. Right. We like to help people. We like being at the hospital. You know, we have this, or not in a hospital, like outside clinics. We just like helping people or the science behind it, but we get tired. And understanding that people get tired and giving them the space to be tired and looking at ways to improve their work life so that work life stays at home. And when you're at home, or no, work life stays at work. So when you're at home, you can just be fully invested with your family. That was something I really worked hard for this year so that I could make sure that the people that work with me had that. And now it's this running joke where, you know, one of my nurse practitioners says, oh, Michelle doesn't like us to work at home. She wants us to figure out how to make everything work here. We don't work at home. We don't do, if we want overtime, we can, but Michelle wants us to work at work and then have a good life at home. And Michelle wants us to take vacation. And that's why I want people to think, if you're in healthcare, like, your boss should work for you. Your boss should advocate for you and empower you to have be invested at work, where you care for your patients and you're really working to get them in a good health space, but also is invested in letting you have your home space.
Yeah. So what heroes or what kinds of people did you see emerge as heroes in your circle?
Oh, gosh. You know, the nurse that's on my team is this amazing woman who, she knows everyone's personality and she like builds everyone up in their other way. So I try to emulate, I'm like, let me build everyone up in their other way. But also thinking outside of the box and how we can help veterans or the people that we work with. Or me, right? I think she's a hero. And I think that the other people who are heroes, I don't know if, I hate to say just my circle, but each of my friends had to pivot in a different way, right? Yeah,
right.
So, you know, one of my friends works in the banking industry and she just started her job and hired 4 employees. And then all of a sudden they're working at home and she's trying to figure out how to make people engaged in their Zoom meetings. Like, that's amazing. Or moms that are like, now I'm home with these kids when I work full time, and I'm also going to work and teach my kids at home. Like, those are the heroes.
Yeah. So I know that you're being a veteran, you know, it's veteran causes are near and dear to your heart. But I wanted to ask you, when you joined the Army, were you from a military family?
Yes, I was from a military family. So I wanted to join the military because I wanted to go to college and I didn't know or think of a way to do it. And I had done junior ROTC at Manzano High School. And so I knew that if I joined the military and I served, then I could get help with college. And they thought that's a wonderful way to do it. And so I actually joined the Army. And the Army said, hey, we'll send you to school to become an LPN and then you can go to college and continue. So I joined the Army and became a medic, and then I was a licensed practical nurse, and then I got my E5 in less than 2 years, and the Army said, oh, we'll send you to college. And so I did what's called the Green to Gold program, and then I was in ROTC in college, and then I came out an officer with my bachelor's in nursing. So initially it was because they could pay for college and I could serve. And I thought, oh, I can do that. I'm happy to do that.
Was nursing your first thought, or did you want to be something else?
So nursing was not, I really wanted to be like a spy, like a secret agent, and wear suits and have like a hidden 45 somewhere. But I worked at Loveless as a patient transport and then a health tech. And the first day I came home from working as a health tech at Loveless Hospital, I just loved it. And I said, I can do this. I'm smart enough. I can become a nurse. And it felt like this one moment where you're like, gosh, the world is so great when you can help other people. And so I remember sitting from when I got home from work, just thinking, I'm exhausted, right? It was a busy day as a health tech, but I could do this. I could work in healthcare and help other people.
That's cool. That's really cool. So now that you were in college, and I'm thinking back to the younger you, and I imagine medical school was really tough. There's a big leap between, you know, health tech and then, you know, nursing and then nurse practitioner. Who were some of your role models and mentors in the military, and what made them so special for you?
Yeah. So when I was a lieutenant, I met this, at the time, her name was Captain Weaver, and she was the assistant head nurse or head nurse of the emergency department in Germany. And she saw my little military resume, and she was like, I really don't like the way you wrote this, and you can do better. And she kind of put me under her wing and said, you know, this is a standard and I want you to do this. And I just thought to myself, I want to be an amazing ER nurse like her. And I want to deploy like she had, because she had deployed with Ford surgical teams and had done all these awesome things. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I want to emulate that type of leadership and that type of woman. Mm-hmm. And there are other, Army Nurse Corps officers who also inspired me. And luckily the Army Nurse Corps has this kind of standard. Even when I was, actually, when I went to Pacific Lutheran University, most of the instructors were retired Army Nurse Corps officers, and they expected you to, you know, this might be passing, right? The average, you had to be above average. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I am attracted to people who expect more. I'm not attracted to mediocrity or just average. I want to exceed the standard. And so those people who were, you know, very like, you should do this. And, you know, I always think about, you know, then Captain, then Major Weaver, and then Lieutenant Colonel Weaver, being someone who was like, you can do this, you know. Mm-hmm. So
it sounds like the Army Nurse Corps had such a sense of camaraderie and belonging. Is the feeling the same in the federal sector, in your opinion?
Yeah, I think there's a shared mission. I think in any organization, if you have a shared mission that is actually a true mission, not driven by some other goal, but, you know, when your agency has the same mission, then you feel like, hey, we're all on the same team. Right. And that helps you get the mission accomplished. And then there's also this building up. So in where I work now, you know, we have councils and nurse practitioners, and our goal is to always help each other and build each other and bring each other up, and nursing too. So when you're a nurse practitioner, you straddle this line between being an advanced healthcare provider, but also understanding the role of nursing and that education and huge leap. So you kind of feel a camaraderie with both. And if I can help someone in their career and they want to be a nurse practitioner, then I'm going to do that. And if someone is a nurse practitioner, they want to do something more, like, I'm going to help them do that, because we're all in it together. Right.
Right.
And if I help someone get that education, they're going to bring it back and continue with our current mission in the federal system.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you deployed to Afghanistan with the 8th Forward Surgical Team out of Hawaii. What was that like?
And that
what,
was
what is it? Wonderful. What is it too?
So the 8th Forward Surgical Team out of Hawaii, it's a great team of like 18 people. And we went to Ghazni during the insurgents from President Obama, and we set up a fort. So there was a Forward Surgical Team that we kind of took over their area and they went back home. And then we had to expand that Forward Surgical Team, and they cut us in half, and part of us got, so we split up into two more. Sometimes commanders don't make the best choice. I always feel that Forward Surgical Teams should stay, but sometimes they split because they have two surgeons and two nurse anesthetists. And then, but what I would say is it's such a tight knit group of individuals that we all kind of learned each other's roles and pushed ourselves to learn more. And the two surgeons that were with us, they were both general surgeons, and they would ask you questions like, well, what do you think about this, you know, x-ray? What would you do here? And in being in Afghanistan, I knew that I love helping people, but I'm not sure if the trauma side or the emergency room side is where I want to be forever. What if I could prevent people from going into the emergency department? Now in war, you can't do that. Sure. You can if you try to have peaceful conflict resolution, right? But in medicine, I feel like family practice, you can teach and help people to be healthy so that they don't end up in the ER, yeah. Right? And they don't end up in the hospital. So it was those two surgeons and Major Weaver who, you know, inspired me to go get my nurse practitioner.
Well, and I think when you're seeing, you know, some of the trauma that you saw in the battlefield, it also made you think about how you could apply that information and those experiences to the home front. But also, it made you realize that you want to prevent people from getting hurt as opposed to, you know, waiting until they're sick or hurt to come in to see you. So shifting gears, going back to the pandemic, New Mexico is very rural. And I know that the governor was very concerned that our medical facilities would be overwhelmed at the height of the pandemic. And I know that we have a shortage of medical personnel in New Mexico at any time anyway. And I was reading that a lot of the nurses currently working are eligible for retirement now, which will impact the shortages further. So is it true that there is a doctor and nurse shortage? Do you think overall in New Mexico or overall in the country, do you think there is a shortage?
I think that there has not been a focus on quality for entrance to certain programs. I think there are less physicians in family practice. There's also less, you know, there's nurse practitioners that should focus on family practice. And then there are less registered nurses. And I think that if we're going to look at New Mexico itself, we are a rural state, and we should be investing in places like New Mexico State University and the University of New Mexico to bring qualified candidates, but also saying, hey, stay and enjoy. Once you've stayed in New Mexico, you kind of I mean, I grew up in New Mexico, but I feel like when you stay in New Mexico, you can give back to your community and people fall in love with New Mexico.
Right.
And there's some things that we can do to improve. We are rural, so we should incentivize providers, psychiatrists, psychologists, physicians, nurse practitioners, PAs, you know, everyone to work in rural areas. And when we can't always be in those rural areas, we can do things like telemedicine, but telemedicine isn't 100% fixed for one-on-one things. And you need good internet to do telehealth.
Issue. Yeah. I think this
right. And internet should be a utility, and we are doing a disjustice to rural communities to not help them with internet.
Right. Well, I think that there is legislature and there is, you know, some national attention. This pandemic has brought forward that many communities don't have adequate internet, even for kids to tell, you know, learn at home. So I think there may be somebody's looking at that. It sounds like you have given, you know, the shortages some thought. So what else are you up to now? I know that you're a Cub Scout leader and you're working on your PhD, but what else are you doing out there?
Well, I'm not a Cub Scout leader. I wish I was. My son is only 5, but sometimes he's a teenager, so who knows about his personality. So right now I work full-time as a supervisor, and I have my own practice of patients as a nurse practitioner.
Mm.
And I am in my PhD program. Thank you, College of Nursing at University of New Mexico. Got a shout out to them.
Okay.
And I'm the president of the New Mexico Nurse Practitioner Council, which is a great organization that really focuses on building nurse practitioners in their practice and advocating for nurse practitioners. New Mexico is one of, you know, 23 states that have full practice authority. So
mm-hmm.
It's a great organization to work with and to volunteer for. I volunteer for Ojo de Familia. I love everything.
Well, you should. And you should become a Cub Scout leader now too. Throw that in.
I could. And I think in the future I would, I think my goal is to eventually run for office. I think that there's no, you know, currently in the New Mexico legislature, there's no nurse, there's never been a nurse practitioner, and there's very few veterans, and veterans, we, you know, in New Mexico, veterans make up 11% of the population.
Right, right.
Which is higher than other states, right? But we don't have that representation in our New Mexico state legislature. So I would hope to bring my knowledge of health policy, my knowledge of being a nurse and a nurse practitioner and a veteran to the roundhouse and work on things that help the community. I think that nurses in general, we look at the whole picture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we can have that perspective and the perspective of being a veteran and knowing, you know, there's things that you experience, but here's skills that you can use to bring it back to whole. And my whole life has been in service, whether it be volunteering for a different organization or in the military or post-military service. And I think it's just time. And I would like to share that voice and to help kind of build our community some more. I think we can continue to grow. I think we can be the place where people are like, oh, I moved to New Mexico and it's wonderful. And I enjoy sunsets and building my community every day.
Right.
I want that to be the narrative. And I want that for everyone in New Mexico.
So I think that was a beautiful answer. I do know there are veterans in the legislature, but you were saying that proportionately to the amount of veterans as the population, there isn't that representative number.
Right.
Okay. Just, I was just clarifying. I'm not very up on political processes, but it sounds like you know, and this is the theme I hear with a lot of veterans, military family members in general. You know, we've served our whole lives or our whole career, and we want to continue to serve. You know, some of the veterans who you would, you know, would not expect, would want to volunteer, go out of their way to volunteer. And I find that just profound in our veteran population. As we wrap up, I wanted to ask you if there's anything else you'd like our listeners to know.
Well, gosh, there's a billion things I'd like you to know. No, just kidding. I just would like to say to the veterans and veteran families, I know that this year has been hard, and I see you from a different perspective. And I'm grateful that you served, and I'm grateful that we got to serve together. And I hope that everyone gets their vaccine and that we can come out of this stronger and better together and then just continue our service. So I would say thank you.
Well, I think that's a beautiful way to end this podcast. And so I wanted to thank you, Michelle, for joining us today, and to remind our listeners that the museum's podcasts are supported in part by New Mexico Arts, the New Mexico Humanities Council, Sandia Area Credit Union, and organizations like Military Brat Seal and Military Brats Registry. And I wanted to thank you, Michelle Peacock, for talking to us about nursing and, you know, the pandemic, your experiences, your service to the country, and also your future plans. It sounds like you're going to be busy. So it wouldn't surprise me if I'm reading about you in the paper one day. But thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.